Joining us now is our next guest. He is the leader of the Christian Heritage Party of Canada. We welcome to the show Jim Nachuk. Hello, Mr. Nachuk.
Hello. How are you this evening?
Good. How are you doing today?
Very good.
Good. I've been busy campaigning.
Have I? Yes, I have.
Yes.
I got about 2 weeks in at the start of the, when the writ was dropped. I then went on a two-week leaders' rally in southern Ontario. So I visited about 10 or 12 different electoral districts there and the candidates running in southern Ontario. And that was very successful, and it was a lot of encouragement. And the back, I just got back to Nova Scotia on Saturday, so I just got into debates and back on the road here.
Now, the Christian Heritage Party has been running candidates in federal elections for several decades now. Consistently been, I guess, number four or five in, among the English language national parties. Has never elected a member of parliament. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. Tell us about the fundamental sort of philosophy of the Christian Heritage Party. What it stands for. How it differentiates itself. We certainly know how. I don't know if you've been listening to the show, but we've just talked to Paul Geddes of the Libertarian Party of Canada, and we've before that we talked to the Liz White, the leader of the Animal Alliance Environment Voters Party of Canada, both of which have quite different platforms, I would suggest, than the Christian Heritage Party. How does the Christian Heritage Party differentiate itself from those sorts of parties, but more especially the main mainstream brokerage parties like the Liberals and the Conservatives?
Tim, is this Tim?
Terry O'Neill, that's right, yeah.
Terry, you're fading in and out, and it's almost that I almost can't hear you.
Okay, well, I think I was moving a couple of inches to the right in my mic, and I'll stay right in front of my mic now. So
okay.
I just want to know how the Christian Heritage Party differentiates itself from the mainstream brokerage parties, the Liberals and the Conservatives.
Well, one of the reasons I got in, that will help me explain to you one of the reasons I got involved with the Christian Heritage Party and about 8 years ago, I was looking on the importance of trying to do something, or more people have to do something to restore the Judeo-Christian values that our nation was founded on. And some people may question that, but it's unquestionable. I mean, Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. The rule of law is the English rule of law, which dates back to the Magna Carta. And if you read the first two pages of Magna Carta, you'd think that you were reading a Christian a document instead of a political document. So it's the Judeo-Christian principles that gives us freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of thought, the right to own property. I think it was a gentleman the other day on the I was listening to him, Rex Murphy actually, and he says what we have in Canada didn't just grow up out of the ground. We can expect it to always be there. And we know in the Christian Heritage Party that it's our Christian heritage that is what has given us the liberty and life and freedom that our mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers before us have enjoyed, and that has to be maintained. So the Christian Heritage Party, the two words shouldn't be separated. It was meant to be the same. They could have called it, I guess, the Canadian Heritage Party, but mm-hmm. Canadian heritage is Christian. So they put those two words together.
You know, that's an interesting point you make, and it's just having that discussion. It's actually an upcoming debate I'm having in the Tri-City News with my debate partner, Jim Nelson, about the value of celebrating our Christian heritage. And one of the points I make is that in rebuttal to him, and he says essentially that as we become increasingly multicultural in nature, it becomes more of a clunker to celebrate the Christian heritage. And I say, no, as we become more multicultural, and there's so many different groups, we see the need to celebrate our Christian heritage more because it's that Christian heritage that embraces the love thy neighbor and the warmth and the peaceful that actually enables the peaceful coexistence here in Canada of so many multicultural factions. So that's I would right. agree with you on that thing.
And you know, it's, and I certainly agree. Our Christian culture allows, and it gives us, and it allowed for the multicultural mosaic that we now enjoy in Canada. What the one thing about multiculturalism that has failed as of late is, and is which is really noticeable in Europe, is that they're they've extended it to allow multiculturalism to bring one's culture, including their laws, into one's nation. And that's where you have to draw the line. So, I mean, we have a Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom, and sure, my mother and father are immigrated to this country too, but they adhere to, as you and I do, under the Charter of Rights and Freedom, not some other ideology.
Let's talk about that, because you have some very specific policies and issues that you want to see brought back here to our laws in Canada. Your solution
on the issue of immigration, Carrie.
Yes.
See, we're looking at, and we've been looking at our immigration policy, and we've taken about a year and a half to put it together. And in putting it during the time we were putting it together, there was a symposium that was put on at the Center for Policy Studies, a conservative think tank in Ottawa, and. They have put a symposium on what's wrong with our immigration system and how can we fix it. So being in the middle of immigration, our national executive said we should send a leader up there to take that in, and I'm certainly glad they did that, because the keynote speakers that were there were experts on, James Bissette being one of them, a director general of immigration to Canada and ambassador to Canada to numerous countries, and there was Julie Taub, a Canadian immigration lawyer and studied immigration law for like 10 years. There was Salim Mansour, who's a university professor at the Western University and a Muslim who immigrated from India. These were keynote speakers, and they were telling us how broken our system is and the cost that it's costing Canadians, how it's leaving dangerous people in Canada, and how it has to be fixed. So our gates are wide open. And our parliament is all parties, the major parties, want more immigration to come to Canada. And they're feeding Canadians that this is good for the economy and it's good for our declining demographics. And you know, these experts are saying these immigrants are coming to three cities, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver. And a lot of them are not learning English or French. They're not getting jobs. I'm not saying all of them. They didn't say all of them, but a lot of them. And it's not helping our unemployment. And, you know, and the Muslim professor says that we shouldn't be looking at the immigrants as the problem. He says you should be looking at politicians. He says if you're no longer in control of who's coming into your country, you're no longer in control soon of your country. So that's why we come out with a quite strong policy on immigration. We're looking at what Europe is doing now. Europe is saying, Chancellor Merkel come out and says multiculturalism has failed. They're not immigrating into the country. France has come out. Prime Minister Cameron in England has come out. Geert Wilders in Holland has come out. They're all coming out publicly speaking that multiculturalism and the immigration of Muslims has failed. Now, I just want to qualify that by saying it's not the Muslim, it's Muslim extremists, and they target the Muslims that are in our country first. They are the ones under the greatest threat. So
practically speaking, are you calling for tighter controls on who we let into the country, the type of people? Are they going to have to sort of pass a test to make sure they aren't so radical, or are we going to limit the number of people of an ethnic or religious group that can come in here, or how do you deal with this? Because you're talking about two really interconnected issues, but they are different. One is immigration, the other is multiculturalism. So how do you deal with the immigration side of it?
So right now, it was brought to our attention that approximately 250,000 immigrants are coming into Canada every year, and only one of them are checked for security. So, and that's why Julie Taub will say that it's leaving dangerous people in our country. Also, she said our laws are fraud enabling. So there are a big there's a lobby out there of lawyers and counselors that are making millions of dollars in allowing these false refugee claimants and immigrants into the nation. They don't want the laws to be changed, and they're pressuring our government not to make a change. So how do you fix a problem like what's happening in Europe? And what's happening if you've tuned to the news in England and how they're trying to impose Sharia laws, or there is a Sharia law now being imposed in different parts of England. So how do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
So right now in Canada, the problem isn't as big as it is in Europe, but there's already indication that we do have problems happening in Canada.
Okay.
There was four women drowned in the Rideau Canal as an honor killing.
Yeah.
There's other ones that are also suspect of honor killing. So we're saying to the government, you should be looking at this now where the problem is small, a lot smaller than Europe. Don't wait 10 years until we're in the fix that Europe is in. They're all speaking out publicly. Do something now. So we're calling for a moratorium on immigration from countries with Sharia-based law, with the exception of refugees from those countries. There are people that are in danger. There are probably Muslim women that are going to be falsely incarcerated or hurt under their culture.
Okay.
That may want to claim refugee status. That's fine, but we're saying we want to call for a moratorium on immigration from Sharia-based countries. And until this problem is sorted out. So this will, we recognize that this will require dialogue with the Canadian Islamic community in order for some resolution for us to come to an understanding that yes, this is what we can do to protect all Canadians, including Muslims. But until that.
Okay, you've explored that subject at length, and I thank you for that. A very interesting and provocative position to take, a moratorium on immigration from certain countries. I want to move on to another subject that is probably the one that, it's the subject that dare not speak its name in an election campaign unless somebody accuses somebody of wanting to talk about it when somebody actually hasn't talked about it, and that's the abortion issue. If there's one subject that the Christian Heritage Party is known for, it's its strong pro-life position. And on that subject, I've asked Ron Gray this several times, and I still cannot wrap my head around the Christian Heritage Party's A, absolute opposition to abortion, and B, embrace of capital punishment. Can you explain to me how the Christian Heritage Party holds those two positions together at the same time?
Well, yeah, it is. And I mean, when you say capital punishment, it's don't leave that and suggest that it's sort of an open sort of position that we would give the courts. Our position on capital punishment is very stringent. And Ron Gray has pointed that out numerous times. The case would have to be so gruesome that all 12 jurors agreed to the murder and the judge agreed to the murder before we would allow, and there would have to be two credible eyewitnesses. So if you try to think in Canada, when did that happen?
That doesn't deal with the moral issue of the state taking someone's life, whether or not that person is a murderer or not. That basically just deals with the issue of whether or not, certainty of whether or not the person did it. I'm talking about the moral issue of the state taking someone's life.
Very good. And on the issue of putting wanting pro-life and putting that up against capital punishment, if we look at our pro-life position is that all innocent life should be protected. And there are cases that for the gruesome murders and things like that, that is no longer
okay.
Innocent.
Well, a six-year-old boy can steal something; he's not innocent anymore. Innocence is a sort of relative thing. Innocence is something that it's hard to grapple with when you're talking about with the state taking someone's life, there can be a lack of innocence in many different areas of things. There can be someone could be guilty of manslaughter, but he's certainly guilty and not innocent of taking someone's life.
Right.
I didn't explain that very well, but I'm just having trouble wrapping my head around it. Sorry.
In the CHP, and I've spoken to Ron about this, and when he was leader, and I said, you know, what positions would you want your members of parliament to always hold true, that you wouldn't accept, you know, voting one way, or they'd only be able to vote one way? And he says only on two issues, and that's our pro-life position and our marriage issue. And the issue of capital punishment was not. So a member of parliament, a CHP member of parliament, he would be able to vote their conscience on that. Now, I would go so far as to say that the CHP, as leader of the party, we screen our candidates very carefully. And they have integrity analysis. They are signing a document saying that they are going to be pro-life. They're not signing a document saying that they are going to be, that capital punishment is a must. When we go to convention, and we go to convention every 3 years, if someone brings a resolution to remove the capital punishment, that'll go to the floor, and that could be voted. Because there's, you know, in all parties, these issues of such as capital punishment, there are those that feel that, you know, maybe the person should have a second chance. He might, you know, come into a relationship with Jesus Christ while he's in jail and change his life around, and there might be salvation for this person. And so there's different arguments there. So, but on the side of pro-life, there will never be a resolution coming to the floor to say that we should make exceptions.
It's fundamental to the party, and I congratulate you for that. It must be incredibly frustrating that the subject doesn't come up in the federal elections, even though it's still a very big, unsettled subject in the minds of most voters.
Getting hard to hear you there, Jerry.
Yeah, I said it must be very frustrating to you that the subject doesn't come up, that you're not there's not ongoing debate on this that you can't weigh in on.
Well, there is. You know, when I travel across Canada and I go to different meetings and different members come up, and you know, the issue of capital punishment does come up, and we discuss it. You know, and it says, you know, bring it to convention, bring your arguments forward, bring your people forward, and convince the convention. But what doesn't come up is ever wanting to change our pro-life position. So
right.
It's with a lot of policies that we have in the CHP, there is people that will want to tune it one way or the other. But on our pro-life position, it's never changed.
Good.
So I don't find it frustrating. It's just it's good politics. We discuss these things and we try to make things better.
Okay. Listen, we have to wrap up now, Jim Nachek. Some basic information. How many candidates does the Christian Heritage Party have running in this election?
We have 46 this election.
And are they? What provinces are they in?
Southern Ontario. Southern Ontario has the biggest amount. We have one in New Brunswick for the first time in a long time. In Nova Scotia, I'm running here. Certainly in Manitoba, Saskatchewan. I'm not sure of Saskatchewan, Alberta and BC for sure, mm-hmm. and Prince Edward Island.
Good. Well, thank you very much for staying up very late here in Atlantic Canada. I do appreciate it. It's a busy time, and we're most thankful that you've given some of that time to us here and all of our viewers here on Roadkill Radio. So your website is www.chp.ca.
That's it. Thank you, Terry. Okay. Thank you, Kerry.
Thank you. Good luck, Jim Nachek of the Christian Heritage Party. And as always, if you have any comments, queries, questions, or controversial insights, please email us, roadkillradio@live.ca. We'll be happy to share your thoughts or questions or comments on the air here with all the other listeners. And boy, it's hard to wrap my head around all of this different stuff that's coming at us. I came up with the idea for the show tonight, and I'm kind of getting bowled over by all the different things. So.
But you know what? Isn't it fascinating, all the different perspectives and ideas and policies that people have? And this is what I find so fascinating. very best, and combine those, and maybe we should elect on policies as opposed to people.
Interesting. Well,
and then our representative
you would have computers
has to
sitting
contract.
In the House. Okay.
Yeah.
A computer sitting in the House of Commons.
Let's just create a whole new way of doing elections.
But there's something, though. I mean, I guess, obviously, every party tries to do this to try to get their best from everything. But that would be interesting to go through, you know, the 10 most interesting parties and to pull out pieces of information that you like, pieces of the party platform, and build a whole new structure and a whole new party platform with all of
and
those different planks.
And then you sign a contract with an individual who wants to, you know, spend his or her time flying back and forth to Ottawa, that they have to, you know, abide by these policies
all of that stuff
we directed.
I know. Listen, that sounds wonderful. That really does.
And we'll call it Utopia.
That's right, the Utopian Party of Canada. Utopian.
That's a good one.
We should try to get a Utopia Party. UPC. UPC. That's a. I don't know about that. Yes. The Utopia Party of Canada. That should be interesting. Anyway.
You like it?
Yeah.
Will
it's certainly. A, it's certainly.
Will you declare your candidacy?
No, it's certainly a better name. I have to admit. And I'm sorry, I hope our next guest does not feel insulted, but I think even the Utopian Party of Canada is a better name than the Western Bloc Party, which he must have his tongue in cheek. Doug Christie, the leader of the Western Bloc Party. Are we having a Bloc Party tonight, Doug?
Well, you never know. It depends on the outcome.
Okay. Good evening. We're talking with Doug Christie, the leader of the Western Bloc Party. A party which the National Post summarized as being for separatists who don't speak French. Did they get that right?
Yeah, that's about right. Although I can speak French. I prefer not to.
Yes.
I find it extremely irritating when I'm on the airplane and I'm watching the last half of a movie. And, of course, the English announcement's bad enough, but then they have to duplicate it.
Yes.
So you really have to listen to it twice.
Oh, yeah.
Because you understand it in both official languages.
Not completely.
Okay. Now, the Western Bloc Party, it's been around since 2005. Just have a handful of candidates, yourself and four others in Western Canada.
Well, I'm not a candidate.
Oh, you're not a candidate this time.
No.
Okay.
No.
So how many candidates do you have then? Just the four?
Yeah, we have four. Yeah, two in British Columbia, one in Chilliwack Fraser Canyon. That's Clive Edwards.
Yeah,
and in West Vancouver Sunshine Coast, we have Alan Holt. And then in Edmonton, we have Paul Saint Laurent. And in Calgary Southeast, we have Paul Fromm. Paul Saint Laurent is Edmonton Sherwood Park.
Oh, that's right. And Paul Fromm is the same Paul Fromm who's been the controversialist, free speech advocate who rankles the pieties of the politically correct. Correct?
Oh yeah, that's, very much so. He's irritating Jason Kenney if he can.
I see.
Because he's running against Jason Kenney.
All right. Now. The Western Bloc Party essentially stands for a separation of the West from the rest of Canada.
The formation of a new nation, yep.
Uh-huh. And would it start in British Columbia? Or does it matter?
Well, it could start anywhere, in any province that has a referendum. And our goal is a referendum in each province of Western Canada.
So the big question is why? Why do you think the West should separate from the rest of Canada and found its own separate nation?
Well, fundamentally, because our resource wealth is being expropriated by Ottawa to bribe the voters of Ontario and Quebec with everything from bilingualism to the Chrysler budget deficit in, you know, Windsor and...
Right, the bailouts,
Canada.
Yeah.
And the political system cannot and will not change in any way because the Constitution can't be changed without the approval of Ontario and Quebec. So it'll never change. It's cast in stone. The Senate will never be reformed in any meaningful way. And the Supreme Court, where all the big decisions are made these days, from abortion to euthanasia to, I don't know, same-sex marriage, I guess, that's going to be, as it has been for the last, since 1949, Three from Quebec, three from Ontario, three from the rest of Canada, all appointed by the same federal government that's elected in Quebec and Ontario. So if you can count and if you can think, you know we're right about the fact that Canada's owned, operated, and controlled from central Canada always has been, always will be. You'll be a taxpayer slave in Western Canada for the rest of your life if you don't separate.
Would it be... Is the bigger problem Quebec than Ontario, or is Quebec an equal aggravation?
They're both equally frustrating for different reasons. Quebec, I think, is a lot more honest about its objectives than Ontario. Ontario pretends to be interested in the whole country, but really it's interested in taking the resources and applying them in Ontario from the rest of the country. Quebec, I think, and the reason we chose the name Bloc was because we're kind of shadow boxing with the Bloc Québécois.
Ah.
Our goal is the same as theirs.
Well, interesting. I would have thought that you'd be big supporters of the Bloc Québécois.
Sure.
Okay, so that's that Bloc.
I got that one.
You know what?
Terry.
I didn't get that. I'm sorry. Thank you. I guess it's
that's no problem. I mean, we spell it differently.
That's
so.
Right.
got a K on ours.
Yeah, because the way I look at it, somebody with your political point of view, I mean, it definitely would encourage Quebec to separate because a lot of the cause of the aggravation of Canada would disappear at that stage, and then they would find out for themselves how difficult it is to live the lives that they've been leading and having all the social programs they've been having without the money pouring in from Alberta, British Columbia, and Ontario.
Yeah, that's right. Equalization payments have basically made Quebec independent in a way, but at our expense.
Yeah.
Is there a movement afoot then, Doug Christie? Is the Western Bloc making an impact? Are members flocking in? What's happening?
You said that with a straight face.
Sorry, I missed that.
Nothing. I was just making an offhanded comment. Go ahead.
Well, the answer is probably not, but we're four times as many candidates as we had the last election, so that's progress. We figure that our duty is just to tell the truth and let it fall where it may. There is no other alternative, and I think in time that'll be obvious, and it may not be as quick as I'd like it, but, the truth has a way of coming out, and this election is such a farce because there are no issues. Nobody's talking about the war in Libya or Afghanistan, and nobody's talking about anything that really matters.
There's issues. Who's running the most negative ad campaigns? Come on, there's huge issues here.
Tell me what they are. I'd be very interested.
It's about whether Ignatieff is in it for himself or in it for Canada.
That's important.
Isn't that helpful?
And it's about whether Stephen Harper is out to destroy democracy.
Oh, yeah, that's right, too. Yeah, I forgot. The Liberals never used closure. I mean, you know, it reminds me of the World Wrestling Federation. You know that it's a phony match, but it's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Got it all. Who's jumping off the high rope right now and going for the suplex or whatever?
Isn't that awful what that guy's doing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine how much punishment that poor fellow's taking, et cetera?
Let's get back to the Western Bloc Party in terms of, so you see referendums taking place, and obviously there has to be some sort of critical mass reached with public discontent.
Right.
You're out there trying to tell the truth, what you believe to be the truth about the toxic nature of a confederation, and trying to, do you have any... well-researched, sound economic studies that indicate that support your position, because this is, to begin with, I think most people look to their own economic well-being in a place like this, in a situation like this. What can you show them or tell them about in terms of the sound research that your party has done?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been publishing research since Blackman's study back in the 1970s that showed that Alberta gives to the federal government more than the federal government returns for everything, including all its pensions. At that time, by about $1 billion a year, it's now $10 billion a year. British Columbia at that time was a deficit position of $500 million a year. These studies have existed for a long time. There's nobody really disputes that Western Canadian fishery, forestry, mining, agriculture, petroleum, particularly natural gas, freshwater, uranium, it's all in Western Canada, and it's supporting the Canadian dollar. You can see the resource sector in the stock market in Toronto maintains the stock market in Toronto. And it's the production of oil and Western Canadian resources that keeps the Canadian dollar where it is. There's nothing Ontario manufactures that you couldn't buy better, quicker, and cheaper somewhere else. Absolutely nothing. And other than maple syrup, what do you get out of Quebec?
Well, let's go back to Ontario. Don't they manufacture bureaucrats there? There's got to be an assembly line somewhere, Doug Christie.
For bureaucrats.
That's where it comes from. If you phone the Supreme Court of Canada Registry, I don't know that you'll find an Anglophone very, very close to the surface there.
Well, and you're right on that, because I do tend to phone that registry often. Doug, going through the basic policy of the Western Bloc Party, you talk about a constitutional right to direct democracy. How do you see that unfolding?
Well, actually, we think that the federal system is created in the 19th century when we didn't have modern means of communication. Right now, we really don't need to have debates in Parliament. In fact, we don't have debates in Parliament. We have a theater of the absurd in Parliament. But we could have an actual debate on television that everybody could watch, and you could vote over the telephone. You could vote through a system where you have a registered voting number, and every time that you want to vote on a referendum issue, you just phone in and yes or no. You register your vote, very much like they do on, America's Talent.
American Idol.
Yeah, exactly. They're technically possible. Nobody's using them for constructive and intelligent purposes. And this would make parliamentarians really insignificant. They would be significant to the extent they could advocate their position. They could debate like anybody else in a real way. And if it didn't impress the public, nobody would vote that way.
So you're talking about basically doing away with representative democracy. Okay, so...
Because you can't bribe everybody. You see, you can bribe representatives, and they do. And this is a very corrupt system. The patronage that goes on in Ottawa, it's a cesspool of organized crime, to be frank about it. In every way, and in all the ways it operates. You get to the Member of Parliament, he gets to the Cabinet Minister, you get what you want. If you don't, well, you're out of luck. So with referendum initiative and recall, people could do things between elections to change things, like the HST. If it hadn't been for Van der Zem introducing referendum legislation, we'd never have had a chance to say anything about the actually corrupt way that the Liberals in British Columbia introduced the HST. Whether it was a good or bad thing doesn't really matter. They lied about it.
Right. What do you lose, though, when you lose, technically speaking, or in a perfect world, I mean, representative democracy has its value, where you are not as subject to the swiftly changing tides of public opinion, where there's somebody to give some sort of sober thought and reflection on an issue, and to weigh all sorts of different consequences, rather than just sort of voting just on a narrow, instinctual sort of a way. Don't you lose that sort of protection with what you're asking for?
Have you watched the House of Commons lately?
Wow.
Is that a sober, intelligent way to make decisions? I really think, and it comes right down to who's the Prime Minister. He decides everything, and he decides who's going to vote how in the caucus. So... it's a farce, really. I mean, you talk about representative democracy. We're a long time from Edmund Burke.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have the intellect that it prevailed in 17th or 18th century or 19th century England or the United States. We just don't have that. And politics has deteriorated to the point where it is disgusting to watch in actual operation.
The issue of separation, though, I mean, okay, then you get Western Canada separating from from the rest of Canada and forming its own nation, call it Cascadia Plus or something. Aren't you the sort of issues that are driving your push for separation and establishment of a new country, won't they then start developing in this new nation itself, where Manitoba and Saskatchewan start sort of being a drain on BC and Alberta? And then so BC and Alberta say, well, let's separate from those guys because they're not pulling their own weight. So then you got BC and Alberta. Well, Alberta looks at BC, and Alberta's richer than BC, and sees BC draining resources. So you've got a separate state of Alberta. And then Albertans sort of start, the Calgarians and the Edmontonians start pointing finger at each other. So they got a northern and southern. Where does it stop?
Well, first of all, the diversity of resources located throughout Western Canada is a better balance than the economic dependence of any one province upon a limited resource base. That's an argument in favor of the amalgamation into one country. But actually, smaller countries are not a bad thing. They seldom go to war. They have a great deal more concern for their own environment. They are more inclined to control their own immigration than large megalithic institutions where decisions are made at the top. But actually, if Western Canada was to create a country with a regionally elected Senate, the division of power would be such, very much like it is in the United States, where two senators come from every state, there would be a sharing of decision-making power, which tends to create a feeling of belonging. This is not the case in Canada, and as I pointed out earlier, it'll never be the case because reform of the Senate is constitutionally impossible. So if we were to build on a sound foundation from the beginning, an institution of government, shall we say, that shares the power between the provinces in a fair and equitable manner, I doubt that there would be these tendencies you mentioned to the extent that there are now.
Doug, one of the issues that's near and dear to my heart, and I know same as yours, and I'm sitting here drumming my fingers as I'm reading about judicial accountability, because that's certainly a buzzword that's not being buzzed about very loudly in this election, which should be. It should. I everywhere I go, people talk about we need to reform how justice is done. There has to be brought accountability to these judges. One thing to have judicial independence, but it's another for them to be able to just snub their nose at the law, create law that has no basis in community standards, and we've seen the pattern here. Where is there a solution to this problem?
I think the solution lies in referendum initiative and recall. It wouldn't be necessary to elect judges as long as when their decisions were made, if they didn't reflect what the law really was and interpreted it contrary to the will of the legislature, which would again be subject to the control by the people directly through referendum initiative and recall, then what would happen is that people would initiate a referendum to change the decision. Like on same-sex marriage, the courts are all for it. I mean, there's no question. If it was a judicial decision only, it would be a fait accompli, as it is in Canada, but not in the United States, because they have this right of referendum, and they initiate it, and there are rules by which the people can legislate, and the judges are not really supposed to legislate, but we all know they do.
One last question, because we try to give every leader 20 minutes or so, and we're
ready to
come to that time. And then we've got some wrap-up stuff to do at the end of our show. But the last big question has to do with Western alienation, which was the driving force behind, especially in Alberta, flourishing for a time,
1980,
separatist
there.
Movement.
Yeah.
That alienation seems to have ebbed of late. What do you put that down to? And secondly, can your movement, your party, succeed without that sense of bitterness and alienation that used to exist?
First of all, the Reform Party stole many of our members, and some of them became cabinet ministers. They didn't reform anything, so people have short memories, but the Reform Party became the Conservative Party, or it became the Alliance, which became the Conservative Party. That's really what undermined our momentum, shall we say. And my own inexperience in 1980 was probably a factor. But what will happen? There will be another issue upon which the federal government has to plunder Western Canada like it did through the National Energy Policy. It's just a matter of time. Our job is to tell the truth about the situation before that happens, so we have some sort of organization in place and a philosophical framework in which independence is possible. It was a very urgent necessity in November 1980 when I held the rally in Edmonton that brought out 3,800 people. It was urgent, it was unplanned, it was spontaneous. But we've had a lot of time to think about it since, and we've prepared a better plan, and we're building on it every day.
Thank you very much, Doug Christie. The website is westernblockparty.com, and there are just four candidates, but four interesting candidates committed to separate nation status for the western provinces in Canada. Good luck on May the 2nd, Doug Christie.
Well, thank you very much, Terry, and we really appreciate it, and we wish you the very best with your program.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.